The Veterans Affairs Department wants to know how it can improve the way it buys information technology. It has released a request for information as it plans the next version of its $12 billion T4 contract. Miguel Garrido is a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government. He studied up on T4, Next Generation, and he joins us now. Hi, Miguel.
Hi, good morning.
So, Miguel, let's start by talking about T4 as it is today. Briefly, what is it and what do people tell you about it?
Sure. So T4 is a multiple award contract, and a multiple award contract is it's basically a two-step process of competition. First, companies compete for a slot on a MAC, as it is known, and then once they're awarded a slot, they compete over and over for task orders, in this case from the VA, for technology services. And so usually they have a period of performance of about 5 to 10 years. T4 ends in 2016. And so they agencies hope to drive down costs by introducing more competition and efficiencies.
And when did T4 launch?
So it launched in June of 2011. And it expires in June of 2016, just when the next vehicle, T4 Next Generation or T4NG, is expected to start.
And what have you heard from vendors and from the agency about how the T4 has gone in its first few years?
So T4 is a fast-growing multiple award contract. It's actually one of the largest in the federal government. It has a ceiling of $12 billion. So far, more than $2 billion has been actually obligated, but more money has been awarded. It's just it takes time for the dollars to actually get awarded. But a lot of work has been actually going through this vehicle. A lot of telecommunication services and solutions. Program management support, software engineering, for example, cybersecurity, operations and maintenance, IT facilities. A big component of the work is to modernize the Veterans Affairs Electronic Health Record System, known as VISTA. And so that's a large project that is expected to continue on the follow-on vehicle, T4NG. And basically what that is it involves, so the VA and the Defense Department operate two of the nation's largest healthcare systems. So approximately 16 million veterans and active duty service members, are in their systems. And so the problem is, But for various reasons, historical reasons and different missions and so forth, the two systems, the two health record system, can't really talk to each other to the extent that the officials would like them to. So the challenge is in the next 10 years or so is to modernize each system because they chose to go separate ways and then to work to make them interoperable. And so that's going to be what will drive a lot of the work.
And so we could also imagine that because of what we know now about the VA healthcare system and patient scheduling and so forth, if technology is going to be part of the solution, say a new scheduling system or something else, that might be something that is bought via the next generation of T4.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's being the largest vehicle for technology services at the VA. They haven't specified exactly which type of work will flow, but it's the two statements of work are very similar in terms of the scope, and they're flexible on purpose because being technology, a lot changes in just a couple of years. So, you know, this new vehicle is expected to go into the next decade. So, you know, it needs to be flexible to allow, you know, new technologies like cybersecurity, cloud computing, you know, and other technologies to accommodate, you know, the agency's needs as challenges, you know, come up over the next few years.
And you've got a handy chart on the top 10 prime contractors on T4. When you look at this, one company seems to dwarf all others, and that's Systems Made Simple. What is it, and what do they do for VA?
Sure. So they are a veteran-owned business, and actually on T4, several of the contractors are either large businesses or veteran-owned small businesses. And so that was, you know, being the VA, they have, you know, goals to do that for certain vehicles. So this is one of those companies, a veteran-owned small business, and it's no longer small, by the way. It's it grew very rapidly. It did a lot.
Nor are its obligations, we should say. They number, what, more than $600 million in this contract?
Yes, more than $600 million on this contract. More than twice as much as, for example, Harris Corporation, which is a large business. And so, you know, that's an example of policy. Agencies have different policies and goals for small business. And T4 from the outset was going to be a vehicle that would allow veteran-owned small businesses to have a chance to compete for a lot of orders. So that's one example. But you know, you can see there, for example, I'll just go through, just so people can see the top companies. Harris Corporation is number two. Booz Allen Hamilton, one of the largest federal contractors, with $200 million. Longview International Technology Solutions, Mantech, Khaki International, Accenture. So a lot of large businesses, but so there's a mix. And so what happens is after these small businesses, you know, win more than a certain threshold of obligations, they're no longer, they basically graduate into the large business status. And what happens on these vehicles, this is something they have to deal with various agencies with different MACs, but basically they're not allowed to win new work on those MACs because they're no longer small in some cases. So that's the challenge of, you know, succeeding on different vehicles. And so, you know, how they deal with that is an open question, and that's something I think they're looking into for the next one.
We're speaking with Miguel Garrido. He's a quantitative analyst for Bloomberg Government. So it goes back to the question that I'd asked in the beginning. Do you hear feedback from either vendors or the agency about T4 and how they might like to see the next generation be different?
So by most accounts, T4 is actually a well-run program. It's up there, for example, with NASA SOUP in terms of, you know, customer service and how well the program is run, this MAC is run. It handled, for example, as I mentioned with Vista, a lot of lucrative work. That there's an understanding of what type of work is being performed on this vehicle. As far as the next generation, there's you know, the scope is expected to be very similar as the RFI. By the way, this is, as you mentioned, the request for information. It's not a request for proposal. That will come in, you know, several months, or and sometimes it takes more than a year to release these documents. But, yeah, from all accounts, it's a very well-run program. And looking at the obligations, sometimes you can tell by the annual obligations whether certain MACs are not, you know, performing up to their standards ex ante. But this is one that actually has grown quite rapidly, one of the largest in the federal government, and not only in terms of annual obligations, but the growth rate. So that's a good indication from both government and industry that when there's a lot of money flowing, you know, month after month, year after year, that's a good indication that it's, you know, it's a MAC that both sides like to use and to meet the mission.
So they'll be hoping for at least a lot more of the same. Talk a little bit about, and just briefly, please, the dynamics of unseating the incumbents on it.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, the VA set, for example, goals for, you know, veteran-owned small businesses on the first one. There were 15 prime contractors, so it's not, there's other MACs out there that have, you know, over 100 or even more than 1,000 contractors. This is a relatively small one in terms of the number of prime contractors. So that's something that I think that they're going to look into, whether it makes sense to include, you know, 30 or 50. And then another issue is how many veteran-owned small businesses you want to include. And as we discussed previously, how that compares to the large businesses, like, for example, Booz Allen Hamilton and Harris Corporation. I don't think this vehicle, for example, has proven that a small business can certainly perform work that is usually performed by large businesses with a lot of experience. But that'll just relate to the specific task orders that are issued. And of course, there's a lot of teaming arrangements. The prime contractor often has, you know, 5, 10, 15, sometimes more subcontractors. And so those dynamics often play out where, for example, if a large company lost a task order, it'll seek to work for the whoever wins it. For example, if a small company wins it, then they'll team up and you know, perform the work. So it's, there's a lot of competition and partnering in that sense. And then another thing to look at is during the course of this new contract, if a lot of the small businesses succeed, and then they graduate into the large business status, what will happen? Will they be allowed to, you know, continue to work on their exist, on new task orders, for example, or just existing ones? Will they on-ramp new companies? That is, will they bring in new companies to the contract? For example, if, let's say they pick 15 companies and, you know, 10 graduate within a few years, that's not a very competitive pool anymore. So that's a challenge that a lot of agencies have is how do we keep this competitive pool, you know, flexible and dynamic so that you can introduce competition at every stage of the, at every phase of the contract.
Miguel Garrido is a quantitative analyst for Bloomberg Government. Miguel, thanks for your insight.
Thank you.